When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Good evening and welcome to the show, listeners, viewers. I have to be honest, I am not in good shape, but please do not storm out and leave us. You can stay for the rest of the show. Welcome to the Anglo-Italian Pod. As always, my name is Rory and I'm joined by my very good friends,
Adam and
Francesco,
he's back. How we doing, man? You good?
I'm good. Buzzing to be back on the pod. It's been a while. I think last time I was here, Juventus were about to take on Inter and we were in flying form. Can't say the same about what's going on now, but eager to talk about it.
How quickly it changes in football, man. How quickly it all changes. I'm just impressed you're still awake after the showing from Juve Genoa. You did well to still be awake. Adam, how are you doing, man?
I thought you were going to actually say, I'm surprised he's awake because he's got no bags under his eyes. You know, his kid is clearly not waking up and not keeping him alive. But I'm keeping well. Thank you, Rory. There was obviously a whiff of managerial kind of essence around, you know, Serie A and FA Cup. And we also saw it in the Premier League with Manchester having their little hissy fit, shall we say. And it was almost like, hold my beer, I can outdo you, right? It was those vibes, wasn't it, really? But how was your weekend, Rory? Because you did kind of subtly tell us your kind of feelings right now, but are you a bit, you know, I don't know, weak today?
Or I'm fragile. Definitely fragile today. I had a very good friend, a friend of the show, Tom, a West Ham fan, who's been on the show a few times. He came out to visit and he arrived on Thursday and we stopped drinking about 12 o'clock last night. So it's been a pretty heavy weekend. My classes today were definitely a struggle. I did manage to squeeze in some football. We were watching West Ham Villa in the park. God knows why. It sent the dog to sleep. That's how good it was. But yeah, I had a very, very good weekend. Lots of alcohol, but it was beautiful in Milan, right? So I can't argue. Really, really beautiful weather. So yeah, loads to talk about. We've got, of course, the FA Cup absolutely delivered this weekend. Gave us some incredible scenes. Thankfully, we won't have to talk about City Newcastle because the other three games were incredible. We had, of course, United Liverpool having an all-timer, Coventry getting to the first semi-final since 1987, I think it is. And, of course, we had Chelsea avoiding a disaster and squeezing past Leicester. In the Premier League, it looks like Spurs' title challenge is over, guys. You could have guessed it. How quickly it lived. And we had some action down at the bottom, some pretty dull
Brentford,
games.
Burnley, that was quite a good game.
Burnley finally won.
Yeah, exactly. They deserved it as well, Rory. And then we also had, obviously, Villa and West Ham playing out a draw. So that was the important game of this weekend.
It could have been more. And then, of course, in Serie A, we had Juve and Genoa trying to bore us to death. We had Inter and Napoli trying to bore us to death. But Lazio did provide a little bit of entertainment against Frosinone. And Roma squeezed the result against Sassuolo, and Lecce, probably the headline of the weekend, getting a massive win to kind of help them steer away from relegation in that battle. Guys, we are going to go straight into it, I think, and we're going to start with, should we start with the FA Cup?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it. And let's go for a United Liverpool all-timer. This was incredible. 4-3. I don't think anybody predicted Manchester United would be getting anything out of this game. I seem to think we were laughing and looking forward to this fixture a few weeks in advance. But Man United got it done. Adam, how did they do it?
They were quite solid. It was I think that's one of the aspects that you have to do. But I think they kind of rode out their luck when I suppose Liverpool should have done better with their chances. And, you know, I think they took the game really well to Liverpool. You know, even when they had, when you think about that kind of last goal that Diallo scores, for example, you kind of felt like Man United were threatening every time on the ball. And it was just really an open game overall. So, you know, although we've been giving a lot of plaudits to Liverpool about how calm they've been, considering they haven't got the experienced heads around them, even in this game, you know, it was those experienced heads to a degree, should we say, that let them down. You know, Luis Diaz, again, there's kind of that kind of whisper around why he might not be kind of fancied for next season. And you kind of saw a little bit of it because he doesn't seem to take his chances as much as he probably should do, right? And, you know, I think there's a little bit of maybe miscommunication in particular for that Diallo goal where Endo and Harvey Elliott kind of bash into each other, you know, neither of them really taking control of the ball. And I think they were the kind of moments that really, I think Man United really did quite well. They did better. But, you know, when you look at the grand scheme of things, I think Man United will curse themselves because maybe they should have won it in normal time, the 90 minutes. You know, Rashford has that chance just before full time that, you know, we kind of expected him to tuck it away. And somehow he goes the other side of the post. So there was little elements of this game where it's just like a little bit of clinical finishing was lacking on the day. But it was a great game overall. It was so exciting. I think that's the first time I've been excited about a Man United match where it's been one of those kind of real clashes, right, with the Liverpool game. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, in a few weeks' time, they've got to take on each other on the April the 7th, it is. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting matchup again. But all I would say is you can guarantee that Man United and Ten Hag will not approach the next game in the same manner. They will definitely do the lapse as they normally do. But I think for their fans, they were glad that they had a bit of fight and getting one on the rival to get into the FA Cup semi-final. So, well done.
Well, this is it. They just wanted to put a dent in this Klopp farewell tour that's going on around the UK at the moment. They've massively done it. And I think there was a few players, like, obviously, we've been talking about, oh, it feels like it's always, we're never far away from Jordan Henderson, but I watched like Kobe Mainoo performance and I was like, God damn it, why is he not in the England squad? He was unbelievable. There was a moment where he just held onto the ball and was dribbling for ages. I was like, this guy is just a different level. I thought he was incredible. Garnacho was insane and is like consistently showing levels now. I feel like he's always been a really exciting player. I was thinking about why I don't like him and I figured out what it is. He looks like a naughty kid. He reminds me of some students that I've had, and instantly I'm like, I don't like you. If you walk into my classroom, I'm thinking this is going to be a rough year. But if I put that to one side, he's an incredible footballer and he's delivering consistently now, and he just always provides a danger. I think Liverpool couldn't keep hold of him at all. And for that last goal, it was really good of him to like pass it on to Diallo, if you know what I mean. He didn't, because he could have been selfish there and taking it on. But for the team, he thought, no, I'm going to pass it. He's in a better position. And then Diallo with a great finish, like a great moment for him as well, right? And I think there's certain players there now. And kind of like with Arsenal, when we started to turn it around, it was the youth products that are showing the way. I feel like it's the same for United at the moment. And that was a really big moment for those players, for them to be the driving force behind that result. And for like Rashford with a very, very confusing performance, but he did get the goal, right? And he did have some big moments, but his off-the-ball work really needs to be talked about because it's terrible. But I think you're looking at the youth product still and being like, this is where the bright sparks are. Diogo Dalot was great again. I feel like he's been underrated for a very long time, but people are starting to notice how good he is. For Ten Hag, now, Francesco, I don't know if you saw Ten Hag's comments. Have you seen many of his press conferences?
The guy, I haven't had the opportunity to watch this one, but I've seen some of the previous. Yeah, quite weirdly not self-aware, I'd say, or always trying to find the perfect excuse. Yeah.
Well, this weekend was even better because Arsenal Twitter exploded as after knocking Liverpool out of the, making it to Wembley for the second year in a row, you've beaten Liverpool. It's a huge moment. Take the credit. he goes back to a game at the Emirates 6 months ago where everyone has now agreed the decisions were all correct. He's the only man in the world who still thinks it was wrong. And all Arsenal fans are just going, what the hell are you talking about us for? You're like, enjoy the win, you weirdo. Such an odd, odd man. But I did really, really enjoy that. I think because we've talked about him in the past, being like, mate, you need to learn to enjoy the wins and take responsibility for the losses. And it just feels like he's still not capable of doing either. But it's a huge moment for him. There was a mad stat that I saw today, though. The amount of 4-3s, right, for Manchester United. David Moyes, 0. Louis van Gaal, 0. Jose Mourinho, 0. Solskjaer, 0. Ranić, 0. Erik ten Hag in the last 6 months, 4. So they have all games that have finished 4-3 in the last 6 months. It kind of shows you the bit of the chaos that's going on there. Yeah. But I thought it was really interesting that Manchester United were the team that managed to benefit from the chaos when it's usually what Liverpool do. Like, they usually thrive in chaos, but United were able to do it. Now, obviously, Liverpool did also have chances to win. They should have put the game to bed early on in the second half, I think, with the quality of chances they had. But like you said to it, like you alluded to at the beginning, Adam, if Luis Diaz could finish, he would be world class. So I feel like he's incredible. He's just his finishing always lets him down. But a really big moment for United. They go into the semi-final where they'll be playing Coventry. But before we carry on with the rest of the FA Cup, we have got Francesco here. So we're going to be talking about Serie A. So we're going to go to Serie A and we're going to talk about, it's another rough weekend in Serie A, Francesco. We've had, should we start with Acerbi or Allegri? Which one are we going to start with?
No, I think we should like skip over them and try and not give them any more airtime that they had, because it was a really low moment for the Serie A and people looking at it. Yeah. It didn't make sense. Like we were saying before, Allegri had all the opportunity to just say the right thing about the question was asked. And with Allegri, with Acerbi, I mean, even after, it's always the same way we diminish things in the Serie A. Everybody was like, oh, well, he apologized. So, you know, it's okay because he apologized straight away. He realized his mistake. He shouldn't be making the mistake in the first place. And he should have some type of, I don't know, not punishment, but something should be done from Inter towards Acerbi to show him that he should be more careful. And also, he's supposed to be a leader for in the Inter team. He's one of the older players, has a lot of experience in Serie A. For someone like him to slip like that, it's a very bad image, bad rep for Inter and for the league.
Yeah, well, for people who might have missed it, he got caught using racist language towards Juan Jesus, basically. You saw him on the pitch saying as well, like, I'm not racist, my teammates are black. And he pointed to one of his teammates who's black, and he was like, oh man, you didn't just, like, you could see him saying, oh man, this is brutal. Adam, it's just another case where this is happening in Serie A now. And it always comes along like two at once, three at once. What can the league do and what can the clubs do? Because like Francesco said there, Inter, as far as I'm aware, they still haven't come out with a statement. They haven't said anything. I've not checked Twitter in a while, but I don't think they've come out with a statement. The league have said that if he's found guilty, that he'll be banned for 10 games. But Adam, what would you be expecting Inter and the clubs to be doing about this?
I think, obviously, we've had that incident in Udine, didn't we, earlier this season as well, where we had very similar circumstances where the crowd were obviously doing racial abuse to Mike Maignan at the time. And all I would say is it's clearly a cultural thing. It's clearly an educational thing that needs to happen. And it's almost like I struggle because, you know, when you look at how Serie A have dealt with it historically, it's absolutely atrocious. You know, you only have to think about that campaign that they used at the time, which was the monkeys, obviously. And that was just such a cringe campaign that they actually kind of used to kind of address this issue. But I think, you know, if you're going to be kind of reaffirming this kind of activity, then this isn't going to be pleasant on everyone. You know, it's not just a representation of the team, it's also a representation on the league itself as well. So I think they really do need to stand up and make themselves a bit more firmer with this issue. Obviously, look, Acerbi has kind of stood with his agent saying they didn't say it. Now, It's a difficult one. If you're Inter, I'd be going down that line of like, look, you need to take some time out. You definitely need to, but they need to put out a strong statement to basically say, we do not condemn this straight away. And that's what should have happened straight away. We do not condemn racism. We'll investigate the situation. However, it does feel like culturally there needs to be something more done about it. And I think we kind of alluded to the fact that it's difficult to kick out people out of the grounds, right? That are doing this action. But if they're happening on the actual pitch, they've got to make an example of it. Yeah. So unfortunately, it might be tatters for Acerbi's career, because up until this point, we had a lot of respect for the way he's come about it, you know, recovered from cancer and then made his move to Inter. And he's actually been showing his prime to an extent. He's been absolutely superb. But if he's got those kind of attitudes, then he's got to be, you know, and he's in an environment where he's obviously a multicultural group as well. How are they feeling? The likes of Turam, you know, for example, Cuadrado as well. You know, how are those guys feeling about the whole situation? So I'm not going to say I know the solution. However, there needs to be something done about it. There needs to be a firm message done within Inter as well as the Serie A league as well. But it's a difficult one. What would you do out of interest, Rory?
I would have him firstly apologize, and I would have him, I would put him on some kind of community service thing within the club, if you know what I mean, like go and not, although this shouldn't be seen as a punishment, but go and like, there's plenty of like immigrant communities in Milan that need help, right? There's plenty of clubs that kind of try and help the immigrant communities in Milan, like go and spend time with them, go and learn what these people have been through and see why what you've said is so ignorant. Like, and that's not as a punishment, it's as an education, like go and see, like, me and Francesco live in Milan, right? We can see the issues that there are here and like the issues that the immigrants have trying to get like settled in this country and stuff. And I think putting him on some kind of community outreach program like that might help both in PR and to educate him. Because I think I don't have any faith in the fact that the league are going to punish him, because whenever it comes to lip reading, there's always an expert who will contradict what the other expert says, right? Because it's never 100% accurate. Ask Vinny Jr., right? They always manage to get away with it, right? So because there's never any clarity, I don't really believe that they'll actually get the punishment. So if I was Inter, I'd be saying, yeah, some community outreach, an apology and some education, because I think you made a really good point of how his teammates must be feeling. You must just be like, yeah, man, just don't like lose my number. We play with each other on the pitch, but that's it. Like, we're not. We're nothing beyond this. I think it's a really, really damaging moment. But if we leave Acerbi there, the Inter Napoli was a pretty terrible game. We will talk about it. But Francesco, we're going to talk about Juve. We have to. I apologize. As you said, the last time you were here, it was all, it was a title race. It was right. Come on, let's go. This is the moment. It's been a few weeks. What the hell happened?
I think we went back to the level everyone expected us to have at the beginning of the season.
Not this drastic, though. Not this
not
drastic.
Quickly.
In all honesty, I think this is more of what was expected from Juve, even by the more clinical Juventini, to see. Maybe, as you said, not this bad, but definitely the blip we had where we were in form and we were looking like we were pushing for the title race, was a blip. Then Allegri went back to doing what he knows how to do. He put Ildiz back on the bench, saying you have to preserve young players, so he's not going to be playing as much as before, although that was arguably the moment where we were playing best, and Vlahovic was doing his best. But the form is terrible. Allegri is completely losing the dressing room. He's lost the fans for some time now. I think now he's starting to lose a bit the dressing room. My only concern is that at the moment, because of what happened last season within the whole Juve universe with the Prisma inquiry and the Plus Valences, we don't have the funds to let him go and bring in someone new. So we're kind of in a moment where, because we want to be sustainable by ourselves, we're kind of stuck with him. So for Juve fan, it's a bit of a terrible, because he will obviously not resign. He's getting paid 9 million per year. So why should he leave? Considering he's sometimes pushing for the title, he's still going to make probably Europe, hopefully. So for him, it makes sense that he's going to stay there. And I'm pretty sure he's a bit like Ten Hag, convinced, deluded that he's doing very well. So we'll see, but it's been terrible. Luckily, I was traveling, so I didn't manage to see the Juve game. Just saw the highlights and what happened. So
it was impressive they found any highlights, to be honest. Because everyone I saw online was like, what the hell was that? Like, that was the worst game I've ever seen.
Absolutely. But it shows that the team is losing confidence. I mean, even the red card that Vlahovic got, it shows that there's tension. They're not playing with ease. They're not playing smoothly. We'll see how it goes on. And I think now Bologna are like 4 points behind us.
Five
points behind us. Yeah. So, we might lose him to the third spot if we continue at this rhythm. Really interesting to see.
That would be huge. But Allegri does have 1 year left on his contract, right? So, and they were talking about, because they were making the decision about whether to renew, whether to get rid of him, right? The interesting thing for me with Juve is the fact that, like, a player like Chiesa clearly isn't happy with Allegri, right? And like you said, he's losing the dressing room. There would be plenty of clubs that would come in for players like Vlahovic, Chiesa, maybe Locatelli, McKenney. Like, there'd be a lot of, like, buyers at the moment. Do you expect to see... Like, Juve would, the board at some point are going to have to make a choice, right? Because they either sell Chiesa, it looks like at this point, or keep Allegri. Like, at this point in time, which one do you think is more likely?
Unfortunately, I think that Chiesa is the one who's going to be sacrificed, because after this year, he only has one more year in his contract. And if things are keeping up like this, he's not going to renew. And they're not going to let him go on a free. They're not going to sell him for little money. So most likely this summer is going to be interesting from that point of view, seeing how he's going to be dealt with. It's disappointing because Chiesa is a very exciting player. We see him when he plays for Italy, where Spalletti gives him that freedom to roam on the 4-3-3. He's really, really incisive for the team, which he isn't for Juve. But that's because, as we were discussing, he's not playing at his best position. He's not playing in the best way where he can exploit his explosive space and his drifting wide and cutting back inside. So, unfortunately, I think, it will be interesting to see, unless there's a shock and Allegri decide to resign and we bring someone in that can... use Chiesa. I think, unfortunately, Chiesa's days at Juve are a bit be short.
Well, I hope Arteta's heard that, because I'd be quite happy to welcome him at the Emirates. I'll be honest, I'd love to see Arteta getting back to his best. The last thing on Juve, I suppose, is we need to talk about Allegri's comments in the press. So he kind of lost his shit at a journalist and refused. He said that there was no comment to be made regarding racism, which is just the hardest question to fuck up. Like, but congratulations, Massimiliano, you did it. Do you think these comments give the board an easier decision to make? Do you think it will make a difference? Do they know that he's an oddball and they just tolerate it? Like, how do you think they'll react to this another meltdown by him?
I don't know. I mean, Allegri's always had a really weird relationship with the media. He's always using he gives the same answers to the same questions over and over. So I remember when Vlahovic first came and he was arriving from Fiorentina, where he was playing amazingly. He came at Juve, did well the first few games, and then started dipping in form. And when everybody was asking Allegri, but what's going on with Vlahovic? And he was like, oh, now he's playing in Juve, not in Fiorentina. You know, in Fiorentina, everybody was playing for him. Juventus, not the same. So, and everybody was thinking, no, it's because you're playing, making him play the wrong way and your tactics are shit. So, but I don't think it's going to be unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be that influential on the decision of the board. Because, as I said, they don't really have the leeway to be able to tell him, okay, well, you have to go and we'll pay you $9 million for the next year, that even though you're not going to be around. So, unfortunately, that's, I think, my point of view is that it's not going to be that influential.
Bad times to be a Juve fan. Another year of Allegri ball. Plenty to look forward to. At least you should be in the Champions League. So, you know, you can be bored in the Champions League as well.
And thanks to Napoli, we're in the Club World Cup.
Club World Cup,
Smash it.
Yeah, exactly. 50 million in the bank, apparently, because of that, which now we can use. it's a big plus.
All we need now is Allegri to actually try and take credit for it, and then that's perfect. if he brings it up in a press conference, then we know, like, that's it. He's lost it. But yeah, the game itself was absolutely terrible. So we're going to leave Juve Genoa there because there's literally nothing to talk about. And let's do a little bit of, should we talk about Inter and Napoli? Adam, I was really, really disappointed by this game. Really low quality. Was it two teams that were just kind of bouncing back from disappointment in midweek and kind of lost, because I didn't see much inspiration?
I think there was a little bit of a hangover, wasn't there, from the midweek games. Certainly it kind of played through, because you kind of look at Inter the first half, they were the more likely to score goals in this one, I would say. And, you know, I think they were just lacking that kind of cohesion up in the final third. You know, it got frustrating when the likes of Marcus Thuram wasn't running into Cern's parts of the pitch, for example. You know, I saw a lot of arguments. That was the interesting thing. You don't see that very often, and you haven't seen it for the majority of the season with Inter, right? Mm-hmm. But you saw the likes of Di Marco and even Calhanoglu having a go at Marcus Thuram for not either going into the spots or, you know, not making those runs. And I think that's the first time I saw a disjointed Inter for a while. You know, I think you can only maybe reminisce about last season, where they kind of had those moments where they weren't maybe on the same par. You know, Barella has been a very frustrating player for the majority of this season, even though Inter have done so well. And again, he was kind of whining all the time. And if it was me, I would have taken him off personally. I thought he wasn't on his A game for yesterday, for example. But full of credit to Napoli as well, because I think they saw that Inter stood off them. And, you know, with the substitutions that Inzaghi kind of made, I thought they were kind of maybe defeatist. They probably thought they'd won the match, you know, at 1-0. But it got to the point where it was almost really lethargic, and then it kicked into gear as soon as Bastoni concedes that corner. So he concedes the corner in very controversial circumstances, because I don't think the ball went over the line fully. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't ever replayed, which was the other interesting thing. Anyway, corner happens, and then Juan Jesus, of all players, is at the back post, unmarked. And that was very uncharacteristic from Inter perspective. But it gave Napoli, like, confidence. And if I would have been Calzona on that sidelines, I would have gone, Zielinski, Osimhen, get on the pitch. Because that's what they were missing. Like, Politano was horrendous. Like, there was one chance where he blasted it, and I don't know if Inter fans were more booing than, you know, his teammates. The teammates were just like, what on earth have you just done? And the thing was, like, it was quite a strange game overall. There was just no harmony to it. And it was, I think everyone just was like, what have I kind of tuned in for? Like, Sunday games are supposed to be really exciting. Even when Juventus are on the Sunday night, you can guarantee some sort of drama, right? But there was just nothing. It was so weird. So, yeah, it was a very disappointing Inter performance, but equally, Napoli probably a bit disappointed that they didn't go for it. Like, I would have thought, you know, Calzone would have seen it. And I know he was trying to send a message to Osimhen. We know about Zielinski being more of a political kind of charm, shall we say, at the moment in time. You know, De Laurentiis wants to prove that if you kind of reject a contract, you don't deserve to ever play for him, right? But that was a great opportunity for Napoli to kind of build up some points in the meantime. You know, they could have won that match, I feel, if they would have put a bit more effort. You know, Raspadori did a lot of running, but there was not a lot of quality. And I think that's what it lacked in this match. So in overall, I feel like Napoli just unlucky on the day. If they didn't push it a little bit more, they could have got a lot more out of it. And Inter, maybe a wake-up call. maybe this is the wake-up call they needed. I know the Champions League match probably took it out of them. I think they probably expected to do better. But on the grand scheme of things, I think it took it out of them, Rory.
Yeah, I just thought it was a team that were completely deflated. I think Lautaro Martinez missed a few opportunities. And you were seeing, like, they were missing the same opportunities that they missed against Atletico. He had a shot that he missed against Atletico that he did against Napoli, and it was like a carbon copy of the miss. And you were like, ah, you can... And he just kind of summed it up. And as you said, with like players like Thuram, he missed a very similar chance as well, where he just skied it over the bar.
Yeah.
And you're thinking they're just mentally not in the right place. I think it's taken, it's given them a big dent to the old confidence that they've gone out so early. But yeah, Francesco, I was spending the whole time screaming, just bring Osimhen on, bring Osimhen on. Why do you think Calzona was so against bringing him on?
Good question. I haven't been following too much what's going on with Napoli. For me, I was more focused on what's Inter and how they're going to react to being knocked out of the Champions League. With Osimhen, I don't know. I mean, he's been coming back since the African Cup of Nations in great form. But I think that maybe knowing that they're going to have to deal with him not being around next year, they're starting to see how they cope in these big games. I would be surprised if he stays at Napoli this summer. I'm pretty sure some top club, probably from the Premier League, are going to come in and pay the fee. The £115 million fee, I think it is, that De Laurentiis wants. It's not going to be a penny less. We're discussing it. With De Laurentiis, you have no chance. I mean, I think last year, Lotito tried to get Zielinski from him, and he didn't budge on one euro from the price he asked. So I think, I mean, that could be kind of the only reasonable explanation I have on why they let him sit on the bench. I mean, we'll see. I think Raspadori is a great young prospect striker. It's good that he gets exposed to this type of big games more often, especially with the Euro coming up. The more experience, the more time he gets on the pitch, hopefully we'll get him in form for the national team. But yeah, as you, Adam was saying, I think Napoli had at some point the opportunity to win the game. It ended up in the draw. Maybe in the end it was the fairest result that for both teams.
Yeah, I think both of them were just relieved it was done, eh? And so were we. So we're going to move on to the next game. And we're going to go down towards the bottom of the table, I think, Adam. And let's talk about the new man has come in. And he's started off with a win. 1-0 for Lecce. Krstović, we were cursing him against Verona. We were saying, what's happened to our boy? We've been backing him the whole season. But he got the goal here to secure the win. Absolutely massive for Lecce with the way that results went around for him, right?
Yeah, it was a massive game. I kind of called this being the big opportunity for Lecce because obviously the previous week they'd been dragged into that relegation battle. And this was a much needed win. Obviously, Salernitana are a team that's struggling. Pretty much, I would say this result makes it curtains. I suspect they're not going to get many points now going forward. And there's obviously rumours about Livriani's reign. Obviously, there was speculated last week with people in Zaghi links with a return back to Salernitana. Do you know what? I think if they would
fucking love Serie A, honestly.
If they would have kept with people, I think there was probably a better performance still in the Salernitana squad because they were unlucky prior to his kind of sacking. But Fabio Livriani has not lived up to expectations. And it's difficult, isn't it? He's been brought in with four games, I think, roughly now. And his first game was away to Inter. How you expected? You might as well just call it three games, right? But the reality was he was never going to turn it around. In this match, they had their chances. However, it was a resolute kind of Lecce. Obviously, with Gotti at the helm, obviously, good appointment. We kind of speculated offline, you know, he's going to at least keep them up, I would say. And he's got that credentials. He's got that background. So I think that's a really astute signing. We were kind of, we didn't know which angle they were going to go to. But Krstović is up-and-coming striker, I'd say. He's been a bit raw. You know, you've seen it in some of his finishes sometimes this season. But, you know, he came up good. And, you know, when they've got Almqvist as well on the pitch, they're always threatening. So for me, there's always been a core within that Lecce squad that is, you know, a good side. And, you know, Falcone had to pull off some amazing saves as well, it has to be said. So, you know, that kind of tells you a little bit more about this story. You know, Falcone had to pull off those saves to keep them in the match. But a really important win when you look at the grand scheme of things and how tight it is at the bottom. So, massive win for Lecce. I think they're going to just move on now, I suspect. But I think there is still a few teams that they've got to face that are in that bottom six mix, shall we say. And it's going to be an interesting kind of next few weeks, Rory, because, you know, I think Frosinone are one of those sides that have to play a lot of the teams around them, for example. Yeah. And in between that, they've obviously got those big games to, you know, the likes of Roma, etc. So it's going to be very tough for all of those teams that are in that mix. I think from the team that's going to suffer the worst, I think it's Salernitana. Because I think last day of the season, they go to Milan. So it's not going to be straightforward, especially if Milan are still chasing for something at that point. But yeah, I think we both speculated who we think is going to go down. Rory, did you want to kind of spill who you think the bottom three is going to be?
Well, I think I worked it out that it was going to be Salernitana, Sassuolo and Cagliari were the three that I had going down. Because, and again, I've not got the spreadsheet open at the minute, but I did spend a long time making a spreadsheet. And I think their fixtures, I just couldn't see them winning a game. Honestly, Sassuolo getting that result last weekend surprised me. Like, I had them not winning another game. So maybe I don't know that much, but those are the three teams that I had for the moment. But if we look at the results that happened this weekend, like just to, for now, 13th down to 19th are separated by 5 points. So it's still as tight as ever. But you had Udinese losing 2-0 at home to Torino, Empoli losing at home to Bologna, Cagliari losing 1-0 to Monza, Frosinone, of course, losing to Lazio, Verona losing to Milan, Sassuolo losing to Roma. Like, so it was absolutely huge that Lecce got this result because they were the only team down there that picked up any points this weekend. So it's just an absolutely massive result. And as you said, the perfect start for Gotti. When he was appointed, like, I made my first TikTok, guys. It was an appointment that I was like, okay, I can kind of see why, but it's not the most inspiring. I mean, we all wanted Gattuso or Conte on a 6-month contract, right? That's what we wanted. But it is a steady hand on the tiller and someone who's going to be like, right, I'll just keep you in the league and then we can part ways in the summer. Like, and I think it's the perfect start for him, isn't it? But as we said, Salernitana have been relegated for weeks. I don't think there's ever been any doubt about the fact that they were going down. But let's leave Lecce there with a massive win. And we're going to go up to the race for Europe. Francesco, two massive results this weekend. Lazio, Sarri is gone, but they get a win. Frosinone has been a difficult place to go. They score lots of goals, but they just concede more. Were you impressed by Lazio? They're just so hard to predict every week, right?
Yeah, I mean, you never know how they're going to show up. I think that's the main thing. Some games, they're really going at it and there for the win. Other ones, they just seems like they don't get on the pitch and they forget how to play football. Sarri resigning was very strange. I still trying to understand the why and how. Maybe there were things in the background we don't know of that made him have this choice, but very important win for Lazio, definitely. A difficult loss for Frosinone, which is weird because they're playing some good football. As you said, they're very good at scoring, not so much at keeping the clean sheet. They had an amazing first half of the season, then the form dipped. Maybe that's the issue when most of your team is based around loaned-in players that once they've shown their value, they're going to be waiting to go back to their main team. But I'm still wondering why Di Francesco is still around and how long he has at the helm. I think that what's saving him is that they're putting in the performance. They've been a bit unlucky in the result they've got. So if that luck changes, it's a moment where we're talking about the team that instead of fighting for relegation is solidly in that comfort zone in mid-table. So yeah, we'll see. And for Lazio, I mean, this way they're still there pushing for Europe and hopefully managing to get there.
Yeah, it's good to see them getting a win. Guendouzi got called up for the France squad this week for the first time in a very long time. Some recognition for a man having a very good season, I think. But I think Frosinone are kind of like the Luton of Serie A this year.
They're like a really nice story.
Lots of goals, but they keep losing by the odd one. And you think at some point, guys, you've just got to get a result at some point. They do play lovely football. I think, there's a few comparisons there. Maybe Rob Edwards is slightly better looking than Di Francesco, but I'm not sure. a huge performance for Lazio. Sarri gone and Igor Tudor in. Adam, we've been linking him to every job in Serie A. It's great to have him in the league, right?
Yeah, I think this is a really good fit in the grand scheme of things. I did laugh at Claudio Lotito, the owner of Lazio, saying that Igor Tudor had declined both Napoli and Roma for this role. That made me laugh a little bit because Lotito has a little chip on his shoulder, doesn't he, as he ever does. But I genuinely think, you know, if you're thinking about the style that Sarri brought into this squad and the way I think, you know, Tudor's had to work with pretty much nothing when he was at Hellas Verona, for example. And obviously, you know, he's got a good coaching credentials, for example, being the right-hand man for Pirlo at Juventus. Obviously, he didn't do too badly with Marseille. You know, that's a not case of a role, it has to be said. No one's kind of done a lot with that team, you know, and he managed to get them in the Champions League. So I think that should be applauded, you know. I know Igor Tudor has his ways. He's very adamant on the way it should be played. But I think this is a really good appointment for Lazio. This is someone that they can build on. I think it's just a question whether Igor Tudor has the patience with Lotito in terms of that transfer policy. And that would be the more important thing, I think, because that's where Maurizio Sarri got really annoyed, especially in the summer where they sold Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. And he's a difficult player to replace. But obviously there was rumoured, you know, certain personnel that Sarri wanted to bring, Piotr Zielinski being one of them. And Lotito went, nah, you're not having that. You can have Kamada instead, basically. That pretty much sums up the Lazio situation. And it's a shame because, you know, we were so happy about the way Lazio forced themselves into that top four mix, right? And they, in the end, finished second. And, you know, you even had them as Scudetto credentials, right?
It wasn't supposed to go this way, you know. It wasn't supposed to go this way.
So it's a shame. It's a shame. But still a promising future, all with the offset of Ciro Immobile maybe joining Inter in the summer, because there's been rumours about him having meetings with Inter personnel. So we'll wait and see if that's true. But look, Titi Kasanos comes off the bench and he scores two important goals, you know, fantastic goals, it has to be said as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they've got a ready-made replacement already, but I think they need more depth. Personally, you know, they've got the kind of beginnings of a really mature squad mixed in with some younger players as well. Casali, for example, is looking like a really good centre-back. Pellegrini, who's obviously, as Francesco will know from his days at Juventus, I've always been impressed from him from a left-back perspective. So I think there's, you know, there's some really good players in there. Provedal, we all like as a goalkeeper I think he's a very underrated goalkeeper. So, you know, promising signs at Lazio for whoever takes over. But now we've got Igor Tudor at the helm, and let's see what he can do with it.
Well, hopefully, well, that leaves Lazio up in, they're down in ninth, but they're only, they're a few points, off. Let's not count the points. That's only going to make them sad. But it is a big win for them. Elsewhere, Bologna did get a massive win. Fabian, again, the guy's getting a lot of goals at the minute. 94th minute winner there in Empoli. Huge result for them, which, as Francesco said, only puts them 5 points behind Juve, slowly sneaking up. The Thiago Motta train shows no sign of slowing down, is what we love to see. And the last game we're going to very quickly talk about before we let Francesco go and we talk about the FA Cup and Premier League is the Roma 1, Sassuolo 0. Now, not a lot happened in this game apart from Lukaku looked like classic Lukaku and couldn't hit a barn door. But there was a fantastic finish from Pellegrini. Really nice goal. Baldanzi came on and should have scored. I feel like he really had the opportunity to get a goal. I really want to see him get his first Roma goal. But Francesco, a huge win for Roma here, and De Rossi continues the upturn, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were discussing on our separate chat about De Rossi performance since he's come to Roma, because at his appointment, I think most of us were kind of looking at his as like quite an uninspired appointment, especially after Mourinho. But he's proving us wrong. He has, as we were saying, he hadn't had very difficult games and very difficult teams to play against. I think the hardest one was probably Brighton, but they're not they're not really in form at the moment. And they brushed them quite easily with a 4-0 win that allowed them to play much easier when they on the second leg. Let's see when they face stronger teams, how they're going to perform. But it's good to see Pellegrini back in form and scoring and being influential and being fit, because he's someone who I hope is going to be able to make it to the Euro with the Italy squad, because he's very important for that team. He's an influential player, the way he's he moves around the midfield and in between the line with the attack. He's someone who can have a good influence up front. So hopefully that he can stay fit and keep going like that. I mean, also, since De Rossi arrived at Roma, Dybala has been playing brilliant football. I don't want to say he's back at the form that we saw him at the best times in Juventus, but definitely his best form in a long, long time. It goes to show that when he's made feel important for the team and he's shown that he's part of the project, he's going to put in the effort and thrive, which I think that's what was missing at Juventus when he was with us the last few years.
Yeah, good to see them all back. And Adam, the last word, Svilar, again, absolutely key. Diego Llorente trying his hardest to score an own goal. Svilar pulled him out of the shit. But he made some big saves in this game. Again, he just continues to add a bit more solidity to that Roma defence, right?
Yeah, I would say that's the probably most impressive thing about De Rossi, what he's instilled. I mean, I know there was an element, a core element with Jose in terms of the style of play, right? But I think their resilience, you know, even in the circumstance where Sassuolo weren't spectacular in this game, you know, they didn't have too much offensive threat, really, but they still created opportunities and, you know, they saw it out. They were comfortable with it. And I think that's the sign of like this Roma side maturing. And I appreciate what Francesco's saying, because I think we've been a bit disappointed of late around how they've been approaching some of the games. You saw it in the Fiorentina match a few weeks ago, where they, obviously we thought maybe the wheels had come off, you know, and, you know, Fiorentina were well deserving of 3 points on that day. But, you know, that kind of resilience that I'm talking about is them kind of sticking to their style of play. They're going about it in the same manner, and he's persistent, you know, and he's allowing players like Pellegrini, Dybala to play their own games at the same time, you know. So I think, you know, De Rossi has proved a lot of critics, including myself, wrong, you know, in terms of I didn't think he would have it in him. You know, we saw that kind of tragic car crash at Spal, for example, and we didn't have too much hopes for him. But he's certainly showing a lot more worth than, say, Fabio Cannavaro as a coach. So, you know, this is promising signs, you know. And maybe it's just because it is his childhood club, right? This is his club that he wants to show his worth, right? And it'll be interesting. You know, I've got a feeling they will push it to the very end at this moment in time, because that run is so spectacular. But they have got, as Francesco mentioned, they've still got a few hard games to come. And, you know, obviously, we've got the Europa game with Milan, which is going to be so fascinating to watch as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive. Like, yeah, really excited. I think they could go quite far in the Europa League, provided they get past Milan, right? I think they could go quite far. For them to sweep past Brighton so easily says quite a lot, I think. But Francesco, we're going to let you go, because we're going to leave the Serie A talk for there. Thank you as always.
Thank you very much, guys. Well, ciao, great to be back.
We won't leave it as long next time, right? We won't leave it as long next time.
Have a good nice end of the evening, and then listen to the rest of the pod.
Ciao, ciao.
Cheers, man.
Ciao, ciao.
Beautiful. And with that, we're going to go back to the FA Cup, smooth as ever. Obviously, I wasn't reading the running order, but it's fine. And we're going to go back to the FA Cup. We've talked about Man United, Liverpool. Where were we? So let's talk about Coventry. Carver going to Wembley. But before we talk about any about that, let's talk about the fun bit. Mark Robbins mugging off a 13-year-old boy. We have to start there. The definition of well done is 13. There's a really good Twitter account called Von Mooms. If you don't follow him, you really should. But he has a thing where he always talks about grown men when it comes to football and just grown men making a show of themselves. And this was a definition of grown men. Incredible. Yeah. Adam, what did you think when you saw it? I could not stop laughing.
I mean, yeah, like he said in his press conference, he doesn't have very much emotion when he's at games. In general, I've seen him at a lower league level, but that was spectacular. It was brilliant shit house free, given that the ball boy kind of gave it a bit initially. And this is why it all came about, because he kind of brushed the ball away from the Coventry player from taking a quick throw in. So this is why it happened. But yeah, I mean, look, the emotions caught up with Coventry. This is an amazing Coventry squad who, you know, only last season they had Victor Gyökeres, who is now at Sporting Lisbon. And, you know, they're a serious side. You know, they've got Callum Doyle, who obviously is playing for currently on loan at Leicester City. He was the one that got sent off for that incident that's made it 10 men for them. You know, they've got a really exciting squad, you know, and you wouldn't have seen any disparity in terms of the quality in that Wolves match. I didn't think, you know, Coventry were the championship side necessarily at times. I thought, you know, there was periods where they were better than Wolves. And, you know, if they had a better striker, but Ellis Sims does manage to score. And, you know, Ellis Sims probably should do better with some of those chances. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a guy that was at Everton, on loan at various clubs. He was on loan at Sunderland before Coventry decided to bring him in. And this looks like some astute bit of business, because Robbins can get the best out of these players. It doesn't matter what kind of standard that they were previously, he seems to get the best out of them. And this is a really exciting Coventry squad. And I think they will give Man United a run for their money. You know, I think everyone expects Man United to win, but I think genuinely they've proved it in championship games, you know. They're doing quite well in that mix for the playoffs. And they were unlucky last season against Luton Town in that playoff final, you know. So there's all the hallmarks there. They've got the great structure of the Ricoh Arena, as I used to know it in my university days in Coventry. And yeah, I'm so pleased, because they've had to endure some crap since they've been relegated from the Premier League, you know, poor ownerships and, you know, almost having the threat of not actually playing in Coventry. That's happened about a good few times. You know, they've had to play in Northampton. They've had to play at Birmingham City's grounds. Yeah. They were temporarily renting the Ricoh before they eventually were able to re-own it again. So it's brilliant for the city. I'm glad that their fans have a little bit of joy. And you know, on this day, you know, Wolves will be kicking themselves at the same time, Rory, because they had their fair share of chances. But it was just so surprising in that last kind of 5 to 10 minutes when Coventry brought themselves back into the match at 2-2. Just the amount of time they afforded to Coventry, because you're kind of thinking, right, just see out the game, at least get to extra time. And you saw it for that last winner by Wright, wasn't it? I've forgotten his first name.
Edgy Wright.
Just the time, you know, Kilman kind of just stands off him, and it was so surprising. Great finish by all accounts, and probably they weren't expecting that finish, but they deserved it. They really did deserve it. I mean, was there any particular players that sparked out for you?
Well, I think the header across for the first goal, is it the flicked on header, the first Coventry goal maybe? I thought that was an outstanding flick on header. I thought that was just so cut, like in that moment. The marking from the cross was atrocious, but for him in that moment to not take the shot, but to know that his teammate's in a better position to stoop and get it perfect, I thought that was a really standout moment. I really loved that. Ellis Sims, if he'd have scored that other opportunity, I think it would have been his third hat-trick in a month. Like, he's in a really, really good run of form at the moment. A striker who's been kind of, as you said, lost a little bit, but seems like he's getting found in Coventry. Yeah. But one of the players that stood out for me the most was on the losing side, and it's someone that we've talked about a lot, but I thought, again, he stood out. He's been moved into a winger position to kind of make up for the fact that Neto is injured. But Ait Nouri, not only the goal, but his dribbling and his passing is incredible as well. Some of the through balls he was putting in, I just think this player is so exciting. And it's someone that, like, obviously Neto is the player that's getting linked with everyone, right? Sure. And if he wasn't injured every other week, I would love him at Arsenal. Exactly, but if I was a club, and I'm looking for a winger from Wolves, I wouldn't be looking at Neto at the minute. I'd be looking at Aitnori.
Yeah,
100%. Maybe that's where the value is. Maybe that's where we'll get the better player and the kind of more availability. I've just been really impressed by him, and obviously very versatile because he's able to play wing back and winger. Just caused a constant threat. I just think Wolves lost concentration. I find it really funny when the commentator was like, "And Wolves have won it at the death." And then I was watching the highlights, and Tom, we were watching, he went, "Well, you got that one wrong." I just love it. And they, he's won it at the death. No, not quite. But yeah, I think that was the only real decent performance from Wolves really that stood out. As you said, Coventry went toe-to-toe with them. And I think, they'll be there for the playoffs. You imagine they'll be around the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get one step further than last time. I remember watching the playoff final last year, and I felt like they just didn't really turn up against Luton. I felt like the day just kind of passed them by a little bit, and Luton managed to just get that. It was 1-0, right? They managed to get the goal, and then that was it.
I think Pence, didn't it?
Oh, of course it did. Yeah. So they were closer than ever. So I think Coventry have obviously got a lot of quality and a lot of good stuff in that squad. And Mark Robbins, beyond him being obviously a bit erratic, the job he has done at Coventry is genuinely outstanding. And again, when me and Tom were talking about, like, it's not a competition of like which club's been run worse, but Coventry are definitely in the conversation for the worst run club in history in the UK, like the shit that they've had to go through. And for those fans to be able to like go to Wembley 2 years in a row and, hey, you know, maybe they get two trips to Wembley this year. Like, it's just, you couldn't wish it on a better fan base, to be honest, and be like, I'm just glad you're getting some nice times because you've been through the shit. So, yeah, really happy to see them doing well. And hopefully we'll see them in the Premier League, not before long. But for United, they need to make sure they don't go into this assuming they've won. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of talk on the timeline of like, so when we play in the final, when we play City in the final, when we play City... Let's just see, because United fans surely should know by now that you can't guarantee a performance from one week to the next. It'll be a great semi-final, I think, generally, because Coventry have got nothing to lose. But let's leave that one there for now, and we're going to go to very quickly avoiding disaster. One of my favorite own goals. It made Lee Dixon to be proud of that own goal. Absolute banger as I finish that. But I love how Chelsea have got to a final in the Carabao Cup. They've got to now the semi-finals in the FA Cup, and no one's fucking happy. Everyone is hating every second of it. Like Raheem Sterling getting booed off the pitch. I think Pochettino got booed because he took Mudrick off. Just no one's having much fun. But even the fact that like he took Mudrick off, they booed him, and then Chukwuemeka, who he brought Mudrick off for, scores the winner, but still the Chelsea fans are booing. You're like, yeah, just no one's having a good time, are they? But a great collection of goals in this game. Some absolute banger goals.
There were some incredible efforts. Obviously, we had Davidi, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mavididi.
But then, like you say, Chukwuemeka and Madueke for the late goals for Chelsea absolutely incredible. The close control, even with both of them, because obviously the Chukwuemeka goal was slightly different because it relies on Cole Palmer really doing that kind of backflip. And he is the man that kind of makes Chelsea tick almost. If he doesn't have his great game or his kind of game on, and you saw that, like, obviously there is something about him in terms of if he could just get a squad around him, just build around him, that is what your philosophy should be, right? You can imagine that Todd Bowley's got different thoughts around who he should bring in the summer. But if you're going to do anything, if anything's taught you about this season, is that Cole Palmer has probably been the best signing that they've probably spent. And he's someone that's got the footballing brain. And that's something that you cannot buy. That is very difficult to kind of do. And, you know, I think they just need to build around him. Like, obviously, as you say, Mudrick was probably having one of his better games for Chelsea and Chelsea fan base. That's why they were really annoyed, because, you know, actually they want to see him thrive. And I think there's been a lot of connotations about him and the way he made that transfer, but actually he started to settle in into that kind of team. Probably the better game for the likes of Casado as well. I thought he had a much more solid game. Granted, it is Leicester City, but much more solid game. And Gusto, I thought, again, he's proving his worth on that right-hand side. Yeah. I thought that was really good. But as you allude to, De Sassi having a terrible game at the back, and generally defensively, they were quite poor, I thought. You know, they let Leicester City into the game at various points, Rory. And yeah, Sterling, I don't know. He's almost trying too hard, I feel. Sterling with those opportunities. Obviously, that penalty should have gone to Cole Palmer. You saw kind of the little tussle between the two. And yeah, maybe Sterling needs to just relax and focus on his own game. Maybe just concentrate on doing the basics. Because when Sterling's on his A game, he does it brilliantly, right? And I almost feels like he's going out there to prove a point. And that's what I think he's getting into. And this is the same arguments at Man City. He wastes too many opportunities. And that's why this is rid of him.
Yeah, this is something that's always followed him around. Like, he's one of those players, like, if you give him 1 second too much to think, he's going to miss. And I think he's always had that, but Pep was able to kind of get beyond that for him for most of the time. And he was so productive at City. Like, the amount of goals and assists he got was very, very impressive. So I think obviously Poch just isn't quite getting as much out of him. I think the fact that there hasn't, even when Sterling was signed for Chelsea, it didn't feel like a popular sign, and it didn't feel like they wanted him, if you know what I mean. It was all from the from the get-go. It was like, why have we got this guy? So I think once you've got the fans thinking that, and then you don't get off to the best start, and then it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? So I think it's really I've always liked Sterling as a player, and I don't like to see him upset, to be honest, because I think he gets an absolute kicking by the media and all sorts. He doesn't deserve it most of the time, but it wasn't a good performance from him. But Chelsea are through. Leicester we will probably see in the Premier League next year. They were comfortably possibly top, but now Leeds
they're
have overtaken
making hard work of it.
They are currently making hard work of it. Leeds are now top, aren't they? I think they went top this weekend when they beat
Is it Leeds or is it Ipswich is chasing them? I can't remember.
Because I know Ipswich won 6-0 this weekend, but
Southampton are some distance behind them as it currently stands.
Leeds are currently top on goal difference by one goal. They are one goal on top, but Leicester do have a game in hand. But yeah, it's really tight up there for who's going to get the automatic promotion spots. Ipswich on 81 points. Leicester and Leeds on 2. So yeah, we're probably going to see Leicester in the Premier League next year. They are basically a Premier League team. I think, Doyle had a difficult afternoon. But Mavididi was really impressive. I always enjoy seeing Daka. He should have scored, I think, had a few opportunities. But I think Maresca is doing a very, very, very good job down there. But what we do have now is two semi-finals, Adam. We have Manchester United taking on Coventry, Manchester City taking on Chelsea. Is it just going to be another Manchester derby final?
I hope not. and I think we can speculate and say that I assume Man City will go through. But I think, you know, there's something about Poch. He said something in his press conference that seems to indicate that everyone's against him right now. He's had to ride out a lot of shit this season. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if he manages to take them all the way to the final at the same time. But I think on the day, Man City will consider this as an opportunity to get a trophy on the board. Pep's always alluded to, you know, these kind of competitions being just as important as the league or the Champions League as well. So for a momentum point of view, he's going to make sure that they win this game. And for the other game, I actually fancy Coventry to do it. I know that's probably me just, you know, hanging my hat on the underdog and being wishful. I just genuinely think if Man United do not treat this in the same manner as they did against Liverpool, which I doubt, I think they will take it seriously. But if they don't for any stretch of imagination in this game, then Coventry can punish them. I just hope that they have good finishes on the day, Rory, because Ellis Sims kind of showed us that that's probably not his best part of or best attribute of his game, should we say. But let's see.
Well, we are with you, Cov fans. We hope you make it there because it would be absolutely fantastic. But we're going to leave the FA Cup there and we're going to go to the Premier League. Oh, God, I wish Ben was here. Ben, you're a coward. You are a coward not coming onto the pod this evening. I will be quizzing you about this next time you're on. I just need to find the right banner. Spurs title challenge takes a hit as they follow up their best performance of the season by their worst performance of the season. And Fulham become, now this is a bit mad, the first team to stop Spurs scoring this season. Wow, London Manager of the Year. How quickly life changes. And I'm not talking about Marco Silva. Let's talk about Fulham first. Mooney's again, yeah. Adam. Again, they've found their replacement for Mitrovic.
They have. And, you know, he's starting to score a lot more kind of consistency in terms of his types of goals, right? He's getting into the box. He's being a nuisance, as Mitrovic would be. Mitrovic was much more of a physical threat, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I think Muniz has definitely been someone that we've maybe disregarded up until this point. You know, it was only a few weeks ago that we started to appreciate what Muniz's goal and game is like. And it's helped by, by the wings that you've got in Iwobi and Willian, for example, providing that kind of constant pace and chasing, for example. But also, you know, when you've got Anthony Robinson on that left-hand side, Luke Castagna on the other, you've got some really dependable fullbacks as well, Rory. So when you mix that in with really two center midfielders in Paulinho and Sasa Lukic, who we know from his days at Torino, for example. And obviously it's Lukic's goal that started it all off, right? So, you know, this is the whole thing. I would say it's been really important for Fulham in that respect. They've got the momentum at the moment, and Spurs were a shadow of the side. I'm sure Ben will allude to it when he is back, but Spurs were terrible. They were absolutely awful, and they deserved everything they got. One of the takeouts from this game, Rory, was how poor Son has been since he's come back from the Asian Cup. He's not been very good. Madison looks a shadow of himself since he got that injury. He's not been kind of playing those through balls and delivering as he would do. And it was just sloppy passing at times from Spurs. They really didn't do the basics right. And I'm surprised it took Ange Postecoglou so long to make those changes, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was the 63rd minute when we saw the first change. No, 66th minute even. And he brought in Werner, Bentancur and Højbjerg, who in the centre two, obviously it gave them a bit more solidity, probably because, you know, they were so passive in that midfield. But, you know, Timo Werner has that chance. You have to feel sorry for him at the moment because that's what he got. Like,
that's
the
classic Timo Werner, though. That is like textbook Timo Werner.
To build on, right? This is the Spurs team that they're going to build, and they're going to have moments like this. But full of praise to Fulham and Marcus Silva. Yeah. If they could just get a bit more consistency, Rory.
Honestly, at the moment, as I think of everything through an Arsenal prism, I'm like, well, Liverpool and City still both have to go to Craven Cottage. And it sounds daft because Craven Cottage is hardly the most intimidating place on the planet, but it is a bloody tough place to go to at the minute. And Fulham are really good at home. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if they took points off one or not both of them. Like, so I think, incredible work that Marco Silva's doing. I think Fulham fans will be delighted. It looks like he's staying there for a while. He's building something. Like, I'm bringing in players like Muniz, who were kind of looking a bit lost, and getting it, turning it around and managing to get... He's such an exciting striker. I thought he was really, really good. Fantastic for them. For Spurs, it just seems like the second you take Mickey van der Ven out of that team, the whole thing falls apart.
It collapses, doesn't it?
The defending was absolutely atrocious. Oh my God, it was incredible. I really, really did enjoy watching the highlights to that one, I'll be honest. Unlucky. Maybe next year, Spurs fans. It's been a very big weekend for Arsenal fans fishing out bookmarks. Ones such as Sky Sports. Was it 10 games into the season compared Spurs' run to the Arsenal Invincibles? And we're like, can they do it? That's after 10 games. Lots of Spurs fans combined 11s where there's not a single Arsenal player in the whole lineup. There's been a lot of busy Arsenal fans just fishing out those bookmarks. Just in case you forgot, which I did enjoy a lot. But I'm going to stop my schadenfreude there, as much as I do enjoy it. And we're going to look at the other games in the Premier League. The other big story, really, and probably bigger than this one, it came out today. It's been released. Forest have a 4 points deduction. Now, why isn't it the same as Everton's? I hear you cry. Well, yes, they have lost more money than Everton, but they did it in one period, is what I can figure is the difference. Yep. So even though Everton lost 105 million, right, was their difference, and Forest's was 250, from what I could figure. The fact that it was in one period, whereas Everton's was over two, is what means what makes the difference in points deduction.
Yes.
For me, that makes zero sense. I think if a club, because in theory, you can just tank a billion in 1 year, Chelsea, and you'll only get 4 point deduction. It makes no sense, right?
It doesn't make any sense. You know, if you want to be seen as the governing body, then you need to be showing the same consistencies with these approaches. Obviously, there is possibly circumstantial differences between the two cases, but ultimately the kind of aspect of you're losing money, and we've said from a sustainability point of view, that's what shouldn't be, you know, this is what we're trying to encourage clubs to do, is be more sustainable. And I do feel sorry for Everton fans and the Everton club in general, because they've got a case to kind of say, well, why have we been deducted 6 and they've been deducted 4? Ultimately, they're kind of utilizing this piece around that certain transfers were delayed as well. This is the argument with Nottingham Forest, that they were hanging for a long time with Spurs around the Brennan Johnson transfer. And that's why it came out that, you know, they basically were late with the books and they weren't sustainable for that period. But if you look at the strategy with Nottingham Forest as well, it was quite clear from the early stage from last season that they didn't have a clear way about doing their kind of transfers, and it didn't seem sustainable anyway. So there was no kind of long-term thinking with that. And I think that's what we're trying to promote. But yeah, it does think of you need an independent regulator to kind of look at these stories and aspects of different cases as well, because I suspect there's more clubs that are getting away with it, but they're being clever with the way that they're kind of portraying those balance sheets right at the moment. And you only have to listen to the great work of the Price of Football podcast with Kieran Maguire, who basically articulates how these loopholes are exploited by clubs in particular. So yeah, Everton will feel aggrieved. I suppose some solace to Forest in the sense that at least they've got the deduction now and they can now start thinking about the points that they need to get. The one thing I will say though, Rory, is as much as like on the pitch they look like very unlucky, they're not getting important points now. And obviously Luton Town on Saturday, they're minutes away from getting a win. I struggle to see how this Nottingham Forest side under Nuno Espirito Santo is going to get those points. I think they're struggling at the moment and their run isn't particularly kind on them either. So it's going to go, I think it's going to go to the wire.
Well, as we said, I think it's going to be running into the summer and we won't know who's been relegated. But hey, Luton win 5 points this week. That's a big week for Luton. Absolutely massive. For me, I just think surely the punishment should be measured on how much money you've lost. Like if you've tanked more money than another club, then the punishment should be more. Should be harsher. I think that makes a lot more sense. But anyway, yeah, I know that Everton fans are fuming again, and understandably. For Forest, they've not been, but like the writing's been on the wall with their transfer policy and how the club's been run. We knew that like there weren't massive improvements in the performances. There wasn't a step up in level. They were still spending loads of money. And you're like, well, yeah, this is only kind of ending one way. And again, we've said there's a lot of teams that have been lucky that Sheffield United and Burnley are in the league this year, and the Forest have been lucky that they're there, but unfortunately they could 100%. Join them as well. I think I'm not seeing enough, like as you said, Nuno's got them like close but just not close enough. They're just not getting that over the line. So I think bad weekend for the tricky trees, but for Luton, a big draw there, I suppose. Really, it's really important that they got something. Another late goal for Luton, they do love a late goal. 89th minute goal from Luke Berry to make sure that they got the points, and it does mean now that in the table Luton are currently 1 point ahead of Forest and 5 points ahead of Burnley, but 3 points behind Everton. So it is all quite tight down there. Obviously Everton with a game in hand because they didn't play this weekend. Elsewhere in the Premier League, the big headline, bloody hell, Burnley win a game of football. Adam, did you see this coming?
No, but within 10 minutes, as soon as Reguilón is sent off, you kind of sense that they could win this match. Brentford, again, struggling. And they are, every game, it feels like they're being dragged further and further into the relegation fights right now. And I know there's a couple points that separate them right now, but I'm struggling to see where Thomas Frank buys a win at the moment. I genuinely am concerned. Ivan Toney was supposed to be this earmark kind of player to come back and, you know, give them hope, right? We all kind of speculated it. I'm going to ditch him on my fantasy football team because I've given up on the guy. He's just not contributing in the same manner as last season. But you can see there was a bit of fight even after what they went down but to 10 men. However, the problem is when you're fighting with 10 men, you need everyone to help you out. And I didn't get that sense with necessarily all the personnel on the pitch. Burnley with Fofana, I think that's a really astute bit of business now.
He's been incredible.
The grand scheme of things. Yeah. And they obviously, the whole controversy was James Trafford being dropped before kickoff as well, which was apparently quite late decision by company. And look, it gives them a fighting chance now. I was looking at the table earlier today and I was like, bloody hell, they only need a win and some of those results in terms of teams above them to go their way. And, you know, we kind of, even offline, we talked about Luton's fixtures. They've got a really tough one. You know, they've got both of the North London clubs back to back, followed by Bournemouth, I think it is. And they've got Man City still to take on away. It's not going to be easy for Luton. So you can kind of assume that in that period, Luton is probably going to lose at least two of those games, I would anticipate. So that's all you need. Burnley give themselves a fighting chance. And it was a really good win for them in the grand scheme of things. But is it too late, Rory? What's your thoughts on the Burnley scenario?
I think it was a very, like, obviously they took advantage of a fortunate situation like Reguilón getting sent off and it's a penalty. And then, but even,
yeah.
Even when they went 1-0 up against 10 men, I was like, they're going to throw this away. Like, I still had zero faith that they'd get it done, right? But, you know, I was wrong. I still think they're still too, like, Vincent Kompany's still too naive and he's not making the changes necessary to try and be harder to beat. Like, yeah, they're just not hard to beat. The second they can see, they just fucking hand it in. And it's only the fact that Brentford went down to 10 men that they didn't get something. Like, I think if Brentford have 11 men on the pitch, this ends 2-2, probably. Or this ends 2-1 to Brentford. Like, I think Burnley are just too easy to play through and they don't... Defensively, they're just so easy to play through. So I think, yeah, it's a good result for them and it keeps the end of the season interesting. But I don't think there's going to be much of an upturn, unfortunately. I just don't understand how... Company isn't getting more stick, honestly. I think if this is Nuno doing this, or if this is Chris Wilder doing this, or if this is like any other manager just coming up with this team and just refusing to make any changes or learn any lessons, they get a lot more stick than Company is getting. Yeah, I think it's just because he's a Premier League legend. He's played fairly recently and people like him. I think he should be getting a lot more stick than he is getting because they've been absolutely atrocious. But for Brentford, another week, another loss, another Ivan Toney interview where he links himself with a move away. Brentford fans must be fucking sick to death of this bloke.
I know, I think, right?
This PR tour that he's going on, it's not going well. I think all of a sudden the rumours of him being linked to clubs has just stopped. Like,
one of the
journalists who's very close in Arsenal, I think it was James McNicholas. I hope it was him that said that. I apologise if it wasn't. But they were saying that, or maybe it was, anyway, there was an in the know on Twitter who's very reliable, who was saying that after the Brentford-Arsenal game, they turned around and said, he's a dickhead, we don't want him in the club. His interviews and the way he's conducted himself has counted himself out of that move. I feel like he's not getting linked to Chelsea anymore. He's just, the rumours have gone. And I feel like it would be just the most poetic, beautiful poetic justice if after all this, no one comes in for him. I think it would just be fucking beautiful because he has treated that club with nothing but disdain. And I think if I was Burnley fans, if I was Brentford fan, I know he's your best player and on his day he'll score a hat trick and he's got you into the Premier League, whatever. But I would be booing his every touch at this point because he's just not shown any fucking respect to that club. And he's like, oh, you know, I'd love to move to Madrid. Like, they get money for me. You know, mate, just... he obviously absolute chocolate, just loves himself far too much.
Yeah, of course,
but yeah, I couldn't believe that interview when I saw it. I was like, it dropped the same day as that game as well, I think. So they go on to lose against Burnley and he's like, I want to go to Real Madrid. I want to moonwalk, son. Like a shit house. But we'll see. The last Premier League game we're going to talk about, I watched it in a beautiful park in Milan as Tom was swearing the entire time. West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. The only real moment here is the kind of controversy at the end.
They
were looking for about four different things. So there was a handball, there was a foul, there was an offside.
Offside, yeah.
And there was like divine intervention. I don't know. They were looking for something else. But the debate that me and Tom had after this, and obviously he's fairly biased and has a vested interest as a West Ham fan. Yeah. But he was like, if you've got to look this hard for something, just fucking give the goal. Like, if you're spending this long to try and find a reason to cancel it out, should you just give the goal? Because that VAR check took forever.
It did take forever. And it was a similar incident in Serie A, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back which incident it was, but it was initially, I think it was an offside that was given, but there was a foul thereafter as well. I think it was the Inter-Napoli match where Thuram
was
running, right? That was the incident. Yeah. And this is the kind of things that VAR is checking for at the moment, which makes it so lethargic in terms of this whole process. And I haven't had to endure VAR in the stadium, Rory, but from speaking to friends that have had to do it, it is horrible. Because you're like, don't know what the hell is going on. All you know is at some point that VAR is checking for something, mm-hmm. right? And that's it. But you don't get any screens to show you what potentially they're looking at. And this is just, to Tom's point, if you're looking so hard to try and find a foul, you're going to get it if you look hard enough. So I've always been against this kind of, is it offside? Yes, no. Cool. If it's no, then fine. The only other aspect you could say is maybe a handball, deliberate handball. And that's kind of gray, isn't it, in terms of area of trying to define what the hell a handball is these days. It's just terrible. But I think it's taking the enjoyment out of the game. And I almost appreciate League One football now, Rory. I don't know why, but I still do, even though that's terrible officiating.
Well, this is the thing. And again, we were talking about this. I was like, when I sit and watch iFollow and I watch the Alex, when there's a bad decision and there's plenty of them, you just have to fucking take it. And you go, like, Doncaster scored against the Alex the other week and it was definitely offside. It was miles offside, but he scored and nobody flagged it. And you went, oh, right, I've just got to get on with it now. Like, I've just got to move on. Otherwise, I'm going to fester in this. And it was it was quite nice, I suppose. Maybe it left you a bit more like at peace with it all. It was a bit of a shocking one that I think it just took far too long to make that decision. But Antonio gets his first goal in what feels like a very long time. Good moment for him. And we were slagging him off, man. Nicolò Zaniolo. Sometimes maybe turns good, up. Sometimes maybe shit. He gets the goal that equalises. A big moment for him. And for Villa, I feel like, you know, this was important that they didn't get a loss here, that they got something out of the game. Obviously, Villa's still massively pushing for Europe. They will still be around there. I just think it was important for them to stop the slide a little bit and get... I think it was a fairly even game. Like, beyond the fact that, obviously, Aston Villa were going to dominate possession, right? West Ham, they're not a team that relies on possession. They were happy for Aston Villa to have the ball. But in terms of shots and like clear-cut chances and stuff, I feel like it was a pretty even game. I think these are two teams that are kind of fairly well-suited. I think for West Ham as well, it's just so huge when they've got Paquetá and Kudus back. They just make such a huge difference. It just makes such a massive difference to the team. Instantly, they've got a lot more danger. Like, Paquetá is just such a beautiful player to watch. And I think he makes every player around him better. And you could see that like Kudus was instantly getting into the game more. He was finding Bowen with the runs that he makes. Like Suchek's able to bomb on and help him a little bit. And like Alvarez, I've been really impressed with since he's come in anyway. But I think Paquetá just unlocks a lot of that team. So it's really great for them to have him back. And 100%. Kudus, well, we love Kudus, don't we? And I think it was another good performance from him. He was quite unlucky not to score, I think. He had a few opportunities.
Yes.
Probably should have put one away. But yeah, coming back from injury, from AFCON, I can't remember. He was missing for a while, wasn't he?
Combination of the two,
I think. Yeah. But yeah, good to see him back. West Ham, they're still sticking around. They're in seventh place.
They're still around.
They're not a million miles away. We should see him in Europe again next year. And drawn against Leverkusen, that is a hell of a draw in the Europa League.
Not a German side.
they can't avoid the Germans, can they? The West Ham fans will be loving that. I'll be singing 10 German bombers for the next the last 3 years. They fuck it. If there's a fan base that loves that, it's the West Ham fans, isn't it? I imagine. Sorry. But yeah, massive draw for them. Exciting, I think, that Leverkusen draw. So yeah, interesting one. Like, we've not really talked Champions League and Europa League stuff, have we? But I'm sure we will closer to the time.
We will soon.
All I can say is I'm very, very excited about Arsenal-Bayern. I can't wait. But guys, I think that's everything. We've now got an international break as we have to deal with friendlies and playoffs. But Adam, you have a vested interest. We have vested interest.
I mean, obviously, Poland's have a must-win game against Estonia just to qualify or stand a chance of qualification, because it's not like foregone conclusion. We have to then potentially face off the winners of the Wales game, for example, or is it Wales? I've forgotten now. But essentially, it's around those sequences that we have to take on Wales to then potentially face or stand a chance of being there. On the form, I would say, look, there's certain players that are coming back into it, Lewandowski being one of them, so that's going to be a good opportunity for Poland. But yeah, I haven't got too much high hopes, because this campaign has been terrible and I'd rather skip it, to be brutally honest. I don't want to be kind of murdered at the Euros, to be fair, and that's what it could be. It could be a massacre for us. However, all I can say is I'm glad that we've got a really good coach in charge these days, rather than Fernando Santos, who was absolutely dreadful. That's putting it mildly, Rory.
Well, at least who was the Polish player who had all the managers tattooed on his back? Was Fernando Santos on?
Oh, Goralski, Jacek Goralski, who had your favourite Czesław Michniewicz tattooed on his back, of all people. I did love your tweet, by the way, where you kind of said there was a retweet of, if there was a documentary on Netflix or Amazon, who would you have? And you just put a picture of Czesław Michniewicz.
It's got to be done. If they made one about Mourinho, it's only the next natural step, I think, is Czesław Michniewicz, the film. Yeah, I'd be quite excited about that. Elsewhere in the friendlies, my vested interest is in Kazakhstan. I obviously worked there for a year and fell in love with the country, the people, the football. They are playing away to Greece. I think, I know Greece have been pretty decent, but there's a pretty big chance of an upset here. Like, Kazakhstan have got some really big results.
If I'm right in thinking, it's Gus Poyet's Greece as well, right?
It is Gus Poyet's Greece as well. Yeah. A bit of a mad one that, yeah. I will be watching that one. That's on Thursday evening. We have Georgia taking on Luxembourg, Wales taking on Finland, and as we said, Poland taking on Estonia. There's a load of international friendlies that I'm not going to take you through, because why? But there is one international friendly that I'm going to alert you to, guys. Wednesday night, March the 20th, this could be historic. San Marino are playing St. Kitts and Nevis. Now, guys, this is the chance for them to get a win, right? We could see San Marino win a game. I think just keep an eye on it. Just check Twitter, because that San Marino fan account, which is so incredible on Twitter, will be worth a follow that evening, because this is their big chance. Like,
some party, if there's a chance, it's definitely on Wednesday night. So let's hope and pray for that little tiny nation to get their first ever win. That would be beautiful.
It would be incredible. Their striker, Nani, scored in Serie C this weekend. I can't remember who it was for. Maybe Pontevedra. I can't remember. But he did get a goal this weekend. And everyone's like, okay, here we go. Right. He's in great form. Let's see if he can get this over the line. So, yeah, keep an eye on that one, guys. Yeah, the England friendlies, I couldn't really give a crap. But I wanted to very, very quickly get your take on, before I let these people go, Southgate versus Ben White. I have a very specific view on this, but Adam, I'm going to let you go on. I think you can probably imagine what my view is. I'll try and sum it up in less than a minute. But where do you lie on this one?
I think the treatment at the last tournament kind of saw this play out in the way it did. Unfortunately, Ben White, as we know, isn't really that bothered about football. So it probably is a water off a duck's back for him. But yeah, the whole kind of hype around, you know, he's never going to potentially be considered for England ever again. The rhetoric from the likes of Harry Redknapp is just, yeah, you don't know the full facts of the situation. Yeah. So please, comment when you know the full facts, rather than assuming that he's rejected the country. I'm sure that is not the case, because he has played for Southgate. It's probably something behind the scenes that's caused this kind of wrath. And I'm more annoyed with Southgate in recent times, but the way that he's dealt with not only this, but also we heard about the comments with Calvin Phillips that, you know, if he went to a team abroad, that he wouldn't be considered. Surprise, surprise, he's at West Ham and he's not being picked for the squad. So make of that what you will.
Yeah. No, I find it, what's really disappointed me with this is how Gareth Southgate's handled it, because you know that, like, if a player turns down their country, you know what you're doing. You are setting off the worst type of football fan, the worst type of Ingerland fan that's going to start talking about World War One and World War Two and disrespecting the dead and whatever else. And now Ben White has already had fucking death threats and people sending all sorts to him because how dare you turn down your country. Look, this whole thing about him not being bothered about football as well is just, he doesn't enjoy watching football, right? His family aren't interested in football.
Yeah.
But I have not seen someone who is more of a competitor than Ben White. This guy absolutely loves competition. Like, I find it fascinating the way Arsenal fans see him and the rest of the football world see him, because we would die for Ben White. We can see the quality in him, the level that he cares about this team, just the quality he brings, everything. But because he doesn't sit and watch football at the weekend, people seem to think he's not worth it. I think I can definitely, like, sympathize with him. Could he have probably handled it better, like being in the squad and not playing? Undoubtedly, plenty of players are in squads and don't play and handle it better. But I think maybe again, I'm being a bit biased, but I think we know that Southgate likes his favourites. He picks the same players over and over again. He doesn't really experiment. And I think Ben White was probably like, look, I'm in the best form of my career. Like, you've got me here, and I know I'm not going to play a minute. Like, why am I here? I'll just go home. Yeah. And I know it's not the greatest response, and you should be more professional and be like, no, okay, head down, like, it's about the team, blah, blah, blah. But I can definitely understand where the frustration might come from. And a lot of fans that do slag off Southgate for not experimenting, not giving players chances, can't seem to get their head around the fact that a player would be frustrated by the fact that Southgate doesn't experiment and doesn't give chances. Like, if you're frustrated by it, imagine how the players feel about it. Yeah. Like, and maybe Ben White was just thinking, I could just be resting at home if I'm not here. If I'm not going to see the pitch, why am I here? And I can kind of sympathize with it. I think what Southgate's done is thrown him under the bus, and you can't come out obviously and just be like, yeah, no, this is what said, this is what happened, and this is why they hate each other. But you can say, oh yeah, you know, there was a clash of personalities,
disagreement.
There's an issue at the moment. Like, he's welcome back anytime, but we understand where he's coming from at the moment. Blah, blah, blah. You can handle it so much better than saying his representatives called us to say, you're making him sound like a coward, and you're saying that he's, like, turning his back on his country. I just think it's really bad the way Southgate's handled it. And I think it's, unfortunately, now Ben White won't play for England until Southgate isn't there. And I think ahead of Kyle Walker, he's been England's best right back this year. I think he's been a key part of the best defence in the league, and we're not getting him now because Steve Holland or whoever, and Ben White also could probably, you know, have a bit of humble pie and apologise as well. I can understand how he's disappointed in the management not doing so. But that's it, really. I just wanted to talk about it because I fucking love Benny Blanco, and I really, really want him. For me, also, he doesn't play friendlies for England. Fine, good, rest, go to Dubai, top up that tan, and we'll see you against City.
You're on Love Island, basically.
No, exactly, absolutely not. Whatever you're doing, mate, continue it. Signed a new contract, delighted. But guys, we are finished this week. That's us. We will be back on Friday to talk all the international football. We'll see what there is. We'll be maybe talking about a San Marino win, who knows. Adam, anything to say before I let these people carry on with their evenings?
No, enjoy your week. And if you've got TikTok, please follow us, because we're desperate to get to that 1K mark. So please, if you have got TikTok, even if you don't, just download the app, follow us, and then delete it forever. That'd be really appreciated. Thank you.
We would love it. Thank you for joining us, guys. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Italian Anglo Pod and on Instagram and TikTok at Anglo Italian Pod. Hit the like and subscribe button down here somewhere. Tell a friend. And if you're listening on the podcast, give us a rating, drop a comment. Do all those lovely things so we can move up the charts and more people can be introduced to us legends, right? So we will see you on Friday, guys. Grazie. Ciao. Alla prossima.
Ciao.
Podcast Network.